Well, no, we're here in Mayo. I'm delighted to be talking to a great old friend of mine, PJ McGrath. He'd be well known as the man who refereed the 1982 All-Ireland final, of course, when Offaly beat Kerry in that sensational final. First of all, PJ, tell us about yourself and where you grew up and your history in relation to football.
Well, I was born in South Mayo in a little place called Kilmaine, which is near Claremorris. And all my life, I'd only one game I knew around our country. There was one game and one game only, and that was football. So we all played football. A lot of us played for a club. I had four brothers of mine play for the club with me. Three of us played Mayo senior, junior or minor at some stage or other. So there was nothing but football in our house. You were lucky if you didn't get a belt of a ball any day of the week.
And growing up in that era, how were Mayo doing? What was the success? So what year are we talking about?
Well, growing up as youngsters was the late 50s, but when our football career started, we'd been in the 60s. And that time we had this scourge of the Galway three in a row. And Mayo made no progress against them, as you know. They always found out that Galway would tell you that if they could beat Mayo in the county championship, they'd win the All-Ireland. And everyone said that at that time Mayo was the second best team in Ireland. Now, Galway won the All-Ireland three in a row back in the 60s, and they had a great team and great lads, and I knew a lot of them personally, because most of that team came from North Galway, which is a border to the South Mayo border. So there'd be only a border between us, and we knew them pretty well, and they were great footballers. They're great Noel Tierneys and all them fellas now. We're all country guys like ourselves from that part of the country. And they were a great football team, but again, they were our nemesis. We couldn't get past them here. Even in Castlebar, we couldn't get past them.
And now, PJ, in the 60s, when you were growing up, in the late 50s and the 60s, Mayo had won the All-Ireland in the early 50s. Did you ever think, we're talking here now in 2011, did you ever think that the time would go so fast and that Mayo wouldn't win an All-Ireland since? What has happened?
Well, again, if I could put my finger on it, I'd be a millionaire or I'd be a genius, and I'm neither. So it's hard to know. We have the players, no doubt all about that. We're breeding them, they're coming through at underage level. We have great success at underage level, as you know, reasonably good success, but we can never convert it into success at senior level. We've been accused of being too nice, and I think that's a lot of it.
Now, you've seen Mayo beaten in numerous All-Ireland finals, and could you put your finger on what happened in those games? Is there any one particular game, PJ, that comes back to your memory?
Well, the famous one in Croke Park when Meath drew level with minutes to go, and the ball hopped over the bear, and what happened that day, again, we're nice guys, someone should have gone for the high ball that came in and grabbed it and said, this is mine, time is nearly up, I make sure it's not going to go anywhere. Instead of that, everyone waited for the ball to hop to see where it would go, and it had one of those unfortunate hops where it hopped high over the bear, and the game ended in a draw. And our hearts sunk, because we knew that we had to go through the whole lot again the following week. And for some reason or other, the spirit never lifted after that week.
Who are the great players down through the decades that haven't won All-Irelands, and were the great players in your mind with Mayo teams, PJ?
Actually, someone in the Daily Papers has that last week, the players who never won All-Irelands, and there's a whole string of Mayo guys listed in that thing, from goalie right up to the full forward line. And there's a whole lot of Mayo fellas. Anyone who played football from the 50s on through the 60s and 70s and 80s, we always had great midfielders. And even the job we had with Mayo teams down through the years was to pick two midfielders and try and fit in the other two or three somewhere. Yeah. Now, Kerry can manage to do that very well. They have changed midfielders into full-backs, they've changed midfielders into full-forwards, but we can't change them for some reason or other from midfielders to anything else. So we end up in a deficit situation.
So at the present day now, Kerry are going to be playing Mayo out here shortly now. You have a fabulous new set-up here in Castlebar. What's the situation with the county at the moment?
It's hopeful at the moment. Everyone is looking up at the moment, because we've got a new manager, James Horton, one of our own, a great footballer in his day and a great clubman out in Ballintubber, out the road there 3 or 4 miles, and now he's here with the Mayo team. And the first game against Down was a draw. We were lucky enough to get a draw on the day, but I think Horton's steel were told at the end, and they more or less held out against all the odds, and we got a draw. Hopefully against Kerry today, they'll be hoping for a win. But I mean, you don't hope too much against Kerry for a win, because Kerry will be also hoping. They were beaten by Cork in the first round, and they need a victory as well. And I'm quite sure it'll be a great game, and I don't think they're much in at the end, but you never know.
Now, every time the 1982 All-Ireland final is spoken about, PJ, it was a historic final. It is history now, of course, and there are things like that that make the game. You were the referee that particular. How did the refereeing start for you, and what refereeing had you done before 82?
Well, I started, like all referees, you'd have like yourself, of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I was at a college match and those old referees turned up and I was a teacher in the local school and said, look, will you do it? So I started to teach. I was playing at the time and playing for years afterwards. But I took up refereeing, and of course someone said, when you did one game, you might do another one. And it started from that, and it escalated without any thought me given to it. I ended up refereeing matches at club level here within the county, and that spread on to intercounty, and from there on to the All-Irelands.
Before the 82 final then, what had you refereed? What big games had you done?
I'd done National League games. I'd done under D1 and minor finals. I'd done two minor finals. Anything that was going on in Connacht that time, you stuck to your problems, as you know. Remember, so you were a referee in Munster, and you weren't brought up to Connacht, and I wasn't brought down to Munster at the time. Now that's changed, but we refereed all the senior games over here. Galway Roscommon games would be my one mostly. Yeah. That was my own man. I'd get the Galway Roscommon games, and maybe Sligo Leeds or whatever else. There weren't many choices here. Like in Leinster, you have a lot of choices. Down here, you didn't have that many. But we had to go at everything that was available to us at the time. Plus a couple of All-Ireland semi-finals there on that time as well. And that's what prepared us for the All-Ireland.
Now, the 1982 final is one of the most memorable ones, is the Seamus Derby, so-called push on Tommy Doyle when Offaly got that late goal. The appointment for that final, PJ, when did you hear about it? And you must have been over the moon for a start.
I was, yeah. Well, I did the semi-final that year, and Kerry were playing it, and it went pretty well for me, and I suppose that could be the reason why I got the final. Maybe I no one told me why I got it or said anything other than Pat Quigley, who was a lot of mercy, and he's gone to his award since. He was the secretary in Croke Park, and he rang me one Saturday morning to tell me there was a meeting last night and you're appointed to the final. That's the first I heard of it.
Yeah. Now, the final itself is a historic final, as I say. It has gone down in history. Looking back at it now, PJ, and looking back at the whole era, you have loads of time to think about it. How has that final affected you? It's the most talked about final of all.
Indeed it is, a famous final. And
does it keep coming up for you?
It keeps coming up. People keep bringing it up all the time. Even someone said recently when Kilkenny were going for their five in a row that I should referee the final in the hurling to make sure they wouldn't get their five in a row. That was a joke that was going around the county here for a while. Okay. But I would take it in good parts. It was a historic day, and if Kerry had won, I would have been part of a great five in a row victory, put it that way. That was my only regret. Yeah. But I mean,
Down in Kerry,
I have no regret about any decisions I took during the match, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, Down in Kerry, they would reckon that you had given a few dicey decisions to Offaly when Kerry was so far ahead that you might have given a few that maybe shouldn't have been given. Before we talk about the Derby one,
I don't. I remember one was on Sean Lowry. He was pushed in the back and he fell out in his face. And I don't know why they're complaining about it. There was another one, it wasn't shown well on television. That time, television presentation wasn't anything as good as it is now. And there was one on where Johnny Mooney was caught by the arm and pulled back from, and he's not allowed to go for the ball. And in that occasion, I remember giving a free in as well. They're the two occasions that I remember recalling. I looked at them on television many times since, and I'm quite happy that I made the right decision.
Oh, what are your memories of Mickey Sheehy's penalty?
I was sorry.
How did that come about?
John Egan. And I hope John is recovering very well at the moment. Yeah, it's great to hear that. John Egan was pulled down in the square, and Mickey took the sheet. Now, Mickey Sheehy is a great friend of mine, and always has been a friend of anyone who plays football. He's a lovely fella and a grand chap, and he's a great man to take a kick and place it. But I think, as some Kerry people said afterwards, you don't have to place the penalty, you have to belt it. And he might have been the wrong man to take the penalty at the time, because there was no better free taker in Ireland than Mickey Sheehy. I think he averaged something like 6 points per game over his life, which is a fantastic record. You were 6 points down at the throw-in against Kerry from Mickey Sheehy, who was playing. It was as simple as that. He's an outstanding footballer, an outstanding player, and a lovely free-taker. But he hit the ball neatly over the bar, neatly into a spot. I say he put it into your eye. Ask Paddy Cullen in 1978. He drove it past him into the goal. If you remember the famous incident with Paddy Cullen?
That's right, yeah.
Mickey Sheehy was just left it down and tapped it. It had to be, even though they can talk about it, it had to be pinpoint accurate, which it was, to go into the net that year.
Furlong was a brilliant goalkeeper.
Well, Furlong had judged it a bit better than any other goalkeeper had, you know, and he just pushed it away. He just jumped at it and pushed it away, and it deflected it out. I was sorry for Mickey, because, as I said, he's one grand fella, and I had a great time for him.
No, PJ, getting to that famous, one of the most famous incidents, I suppose, in the GAA history, the Seamus Derby, Tommy Doyle incident. Paint a picture of what happened, and where were you?
The ball came up the field from, I forget who brought it up the field, and they got a free. It was taken by one of the O'Connors, if I remember. And Jacko had gone back into the back line, which he normally did that type of time, to catch the ball. And one of the Kerry players said to me afterwards, when Jacko didn't get it, they were getting worried that it might break to some other one. and every one of the Kelly fellas made a lunge towards the ball to make sure that if it broke towards them, they'd get it. And I think the Kerry backs involved in this case did the same thing, but realising that the ball travelled farther than they expected, when they tried to come back, I think there was a man standing in the way. I don't believe there was any push. Quite honestly, I don't believe there was. If there was, I'd give him a free. I have no worries at all about giving a free in or out. That didn't come. I did it as fair as I possibly could, because I knew that anything you do in Ireland finals, you know yourself, will be judged harshly by everyone for many years afterwards.
I always maintain, PJ, that it was the action of a highly experienced forward to do what Darby did. Now, I'm not saying it was a foul now,
yeah.
But he still was able to put Tommy Doyle off that little tightest. But that was, you can only do that if you're playing the game for many, many years. And Seamus Darby was highly experienced. A young player couldn't do that.
He was vastly experienced.
Would you agree with me there?
I would agree with you totally. He was vastly experienced, and he made himself comfortable when the ball was coming to him.
Yeah.
So he'd have it in a position to shoot it afterwards. And that's what an experienced player will do.
Would you agree that he made contact with Doyle?
Oh, he did, yeah. There's a bump off him, mate. Because, I mean, I don't think there's anything other than a bump in it.
I would agree with you.
Yeah. And I couldn't see any free in it, quite honestly, now. And I certainly didn't expect a goal to come off it. And neither did any one of the 80,000 people. They expect a goal to come off it.
Yeah.
But and I don't know whether Seamus himself, I never spoke to him much about it, but I don't know whether he expected a goal to come off it or not. But it was one of those. If you're a Kerry man to the free goal, if you're an Offaly man to the goal of the year.
For the remaining minutes now, PJ, Kerry came forward and warm. So what are your memories of the remaining minutes? And for you personally, was it a difficult time making up your mind about certain things?
No, my mind was clear the whole time on what I was doing and what I thought. I had no problem with it. They got chances afterwards they didn't take. And again, going back to your experience, if you think of the players was involved, experience made a difference. And the bomber came flying across the pitch looking for a pass at one stage in that last minute. And had he got it, I know how to end it up, straight over the bar at the level. But he didn't get the pass. That's one of the problems, I think, that if you look at the tape, you'll find out that the bomber positioned himself in a great situation. Again, another genius of a footballer who knew how to handle these situations, had the experience, and he positioned himself in running at high speed to receive the ball. He didn't get it, and there's no point.
In the aftermath of the final, PJ, and I'll go further and say since, I mean, I've no doubt you must be inundated with people talk to you about it. How has it affected your life? Has it stayed with you? It must have had. And in the aftermath of the final, the following day and the weeks after and all, the tour was about it and all, did you get down and out about it? Did it affect you?
No, it didn't affect me one bit that way. I had no problem at all. Matter of fact, I met a priest from St. Giles College who has gone to his eternal reward now, and he told me that he'll show that game forevermore to the team in the college, because he said it's not over until the fat lady sings. And another thing he said, 5 of the 6 halfbacks scored points that day. There was all the Offaly halfback line and 2 of the Kerry halfback line scored points. Now he said that is football at his best. And he said, I'll show that to my team. And he trained several teams to win All-Ireland Colleges matches afterwards from St. Gervais. And he rang me up to tell me that, he said, I'm delighted I have the tape of it, he said, to show them. He said, the few things that matters, he said, the long-range kicking of points, which was absolutely brilliant by both sides. And it's on top of that, then he said, the fact that it's never over. Until, he said, he uses the phrase himself, when the fat lady sings. And he said, they learn from that. He said, and they do, he said, it's worthwhile.
How has it come up in your life since? Are you, like, I met you here today now, and the first thing I thought about was PJ and the 82 final. How has it affected your life since? Does it come up very often?
Sure it does, you get the odd one. But again, I've never got anything but favourable comment, quite honestly. And that helps me out a lot, of course. But I never got any but favourable comment. And I got some brilliant Kerry people I've met in the town through the years, particularly the ex-players and ex-people involved with Clare County Board. And, I mean, they've been very supportive as well.
Following that final...
They're pure gentlemen and great footballers, and they're never anything but that. And that's what they'll always be remembered by, irrespective of what they won.
Have you sat down and looked at the game many times?
I have indeed, yeah, several times.
Is there anything you think you did wrong?
Nothing that I wouldn't do again. I couldn't remember anything that would be make such a different decision on the game. The penalty that John Egan got, I think he was fouled probably twice, but I wasn't sure the first time because he fell back rather than pull back.
I remember. Yeah.
But he said, "But definitely the second time he was pulled down.
Yeah.
If the hand went across his chest and he was pulled down.
Yeah.
And Neil O'Hare commented on the same thing. He's much the same thing. The first one was iffy,
yeah.
But 2 seconds afterwards, he was pulled down.
Yeah, yeah. Now, on the same point, talking to us as two ex-referees, would I be right in saying, PJ, that you must be 101% certain it's the penalty, if he's no good? You don't give a penalty unless you're 101% certain.
That was it, yeah. And that was it happened in that case with John Egan now. I was not 100% certain the first time. But when he fell and stumbled, he was turning. Right, he turned his back into the back behind him, and I'd say a lot of the momentum was created by himself turning and falling, even though it did look like maybe he got a help on the way down. But certainly when he got up, he was pulled down again.
It didn't warrant, and
it made no problem. It made life easy for me. Yeah, I like to see a good, when the penalty is given, as you know yourself, you like to be decisive, and that there's no problem about it. But there was two episodes of that penalty, and I think I did the right decision on both of them.
How did life come after then, refereeing then, after the 82 final, bring us up to the end of your career?
I did a semi-final in 83, and there was a replay on that one, Cork and Dublin, down in Cork.
I did the other semi-final.
You did a lot of semi-finals, and you should have got an All-Ireland final.
And I should have got the 83 one.
The 83
probably,
final was made out for you.
Yeah.
And I said it to many one since, many a time, that one of the greatest referees, referees don't get the chance that often, simply because the Kerry are doing so well. It's not easy to get an All-Ireland semi-final.
It's surprising, PJ, now that we're on it and we're going looking back through the decades, it's surprising that Croke Park appointed John Goff, who's highly inexperienced.
Well, in our estimation at the time, he was, yeah. He was highly inexperienced. But then, you have another man who suffered, Aidan Mangan, in recent times. Aidan Mangan's a wonderful referee, a great referee, a great time for him. And yet he's caught in because Kerry's success. The same thing happened to you in your time. You should have got the 83, there's no doubt at all about that. And everyone thought you were going to get thought to the show in, and all of a sudden the other announcement was made. And, you know, fair play to him, he did his job.
Oh, he did, yeah. When did you finish up refereeing then?
I went to Australia then with the compromised rules. It was the Heffos team. I was 86. And the following year, 87, I finished.
Yeah.
I finished up refereeing in 87.
Yeah. Now, PJ, staying on refereeing now, and it's very interesting and it should be discussed. Will we ever be able to have consistency on the tackle? I maintain myself that the tackle in Gaelic football can never, ever be brought in consistently. Every referee I see, he has a different interpretation. There's so many fouls in the tackle.
There's too many fouls that are not being pulled, in my book. I'd say you'd agree with that too, probably. The tackle is only the tackle on the ball. You can only tackle the ball, that we know, and that's never mentioned. Coaching is, I think, the fault here. They should coach more, that you can only touch the ball, you can only tackle the ball, you can block the kick. You can get in the way, you can be awkward, put it that way, but you can't push or shove or kick or pull a fella down and thump him or anything like that, and that's happening at the moment.
I also maintain, and from my view as an analyst with Radio Kerry, I also maintain that there are a lot of yellow cards being given that shouldn't be given, that the game might be turning into, like, basketball-style refereeing. Is there a danger of that, you think?
There is indeed, yeah. I think they got rid of the black card there last year, because at least the yellow card, there's only two cards now, the yellow and red. Yeah. It doesn't matter that much. There was too many cards. There's been over cards completely. It was ridiculous. I mean, there's a natural flow to every player and to every game, and experienced referees know that. And you let things go that, you know, are just accidental bumps and touches and things like that, and you don't be given cards for them. I think it's gone beyond the beyonds.
I'd agree with you, PJ. Come here, we're sitting here now in Castlebar. You've a fantastic new stadium here. Talk to me about it, and when was it all developed?
It's all developed over the last couple of years. It was opened here last year, and it's fully lit. As you can see, the lights are all working. There's five pitches here in this area completely. There's three belong to Castlebar Mitchells, and there's three belong to County Board, and two belong to Castlebar Mitchells. Yeah. This is the County Board, and there's the County Board training pitch at the back of it, and another County Board one above it.
And how many does the stand seat?
10,000 people, all seated.
What's your involvement at the moment in the GA?
Well, I'm retired now, and I'm trying to retire out as many things as I can. I was involved in Connacht Council for 20-something years. I was chairman of the Connacht Council. I was involved in management in Croke Park, and as a trustee in Croke Park, and recently as chairman of the Referees Committee. That's just finished now. That's over a year ago. I finished up as chairman of the Referees Committee. And I'm involved in hearings now. They're kind of a
state solicitor, they call them, I suppose. So in addition to objections and appeals and that type of thing. So that's now what I'm, nice, comfortable number. So I only come in the gate this morning there when somebody handed me an envelope that I had to deal with an incident here in Mayo. I went to the county board, and the secretary of the county board handed me, said, that's your job.
So. Well, PJ, since I was last here about 2 or 3 years ago with Kerry, a great Kerry footballer died here, Donnie Murphy, who was a great friend of mine. Yeah. He was a member of my own club, Killarney Legion, and I played with him. He won an All-Ireland in 1953 with Kerry, and he was buried here in Castlebar. So I'm just remembering him now because he was a lovely gentleman, great footballer and a great friend.
And a good friend of mine too, and we had Kerry men, and we had many a chat about different things, including finals, and different finals they lost and finals they won. And he was always ever present over here in the Mitchell's headquarters, right beside the stand here. He was always there. That was his pub, the local place. He went in there and he was well received and everyone was happy with Donnie. He was a lovely man.
Did you know that in 1955 he played fullback for Kerry against Cork in the Munster final in Killarney? He was man of the match. And when he came off the field, he got ill and he turned out he had tuberculosis and he never again wore a Kerry jersey.
I didn't know that incident now. But he was in good health whilst he was here now.
Yeah.
In Mayo.
He had gone through a tough life.
Yeah, he had gone through a tough life, yeah. But still, he was in good health enough now. And good man, a tall, strong man, and loved his football and loved talking about it. And we had many a great chat down here at the Mitchells.
Nice to remember people like that. PJ, listen to me. It was great meeting you. It was great chatting to you and recording that incident of Seamus Darby, because I firmly believe that it was the action of a highly experienced player and that a young man couldn't do it now, because I tell you have to be playing for years before you could give, as you said, what did you call it? You called it a touch?
A bump.
A bump. You can't, yeah. I would agree with you, actually. But that's a good way to put
someone
it.
Someone said, asked Darby, since I heard, what did he think of it? He said, very simple language, excuse my French, I asked him out of it.
Yeah, exactly. PJ, lovely talking to you.
And lovely meeting you, Wishy.
Lovely meeting you.